Thank you. It's good to see everybody this morning. As I talk about envy, the sneaky sin, on January 30th, 1991, a 36-year-old woman, Wanda Webb Holloway, was arrested in Channelville, Texas, for a very bizarre crime. Mrs. Holloway, a regular church attender, and in fact the organist for her local congregation, was found guilty of hiring a hitman. She wanted to hire someone to kill the mother of her daughter's main competitor in cheerleading. This is a true story. Initially, she wanted to have the mother and the daughter both killed, but she couldn't afford the $7,500 fee. So she settled on having only the mother killed for the reduced price of $2,500. Channelview High School had one of the most successful cheerleading squads in the whole state. They even won several national championships, so cheerleading was a big deal. Holloway had watched as her daughter failed to get the recognition that she thought that she deserved because her rival, her 13-year-old neighbor, Amber Heath. Holloway had become increasingly angry and frustrated, filled with envy about Amber's success in the sport to the detriment of her daughter. In the high-stakes world of competitive cheerleading, it seemed to her there was not room enough for both of them. When she couldn't raise the money to have the mother and the daughter both killed, she decided that if Amber's mother was to die, this would surely cause Amber to experience deep grief and therefore be distracted to the point where it would damage her focus. Then Mrs. Holloway's daughter could prevail. In court, the police investigator described Mrs. Holloway as, quote, cold, calculating, and persistent about her intentions over an extended period of time. The envy had gnawed at her night and day until it caused her to try to take these extraordinary measures. Thankfully, the murder scheme was never carried out, but Holloway was found guilty for her crime of trying. Her irrational envy earned her a 15-year prison sentence, all over the maniacal desire that her daughter prevail in cheerleading over a competitor. Now, usually envy does not take such an extreme form or lead to such extreme actions, but it can be the source and the foundation for very many lesser kinds of sins. Early Christian writers made lists of the most common and most dangerous sins that people could commit. Over the years, moral theologians settled on a list of transgressions that came to be known as the seven deadly sins. These are pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth. Now, most of these sins get a lot of attention. You can see them acted out in films and television dramas. You can witness their results on the news. You can hear them addressed and warned against in sermons and moral exhortations. They're a big deal, which is probably why Thomas Aquinas called them the capital sins. One could easily explore each one of them in its own sermon. But when was the last time that you heard a sermon on envy? Why does this sin seem to get so much less notice than the others? Why have I, in this sermon, labeled it as the sneaky sin? Perhaps it's because most of these other sins manifest themselves in immediate and discernible external actions and results. Because we can see their results more directly, such sins are much harder for us to justify or to excuse. But envy is different. It is an internal sin. You can clearly see someone being proud, being wrathful, being greedy. But envy is more insidious. It is sneaky. And it is often the ultimate source for even greater sinful actions. It is the root cause of many other outward sins. So what is envy? Well, envy, as we talked about with the kids, is not simply jealousy. It's not simply wishing to have something that someone else has. Envy is something deeper and darker. It is the feeling of consternation that I get when someone else has something that I want, something I begrudge them for having. It might be notoriety, money, possessions, positions, respect, love. And it's not just that I want what they have. I want to have it and for them not to have it. That's envy. Now, of whom do we tend to be envious? I think they're usually one of three targets for envy. First, we're envious towards those whose abilities and accomplishments are, in our very humble opinion, less than ours. People who are not as deserving as we are. We think to ourselves, I have greater gifts, but they're getting all the attention. Second, toward those who make us feel inferior by their accomplishments and their talents, which results in us making it our goal to bring them down a peg. Our desire is to drag them down to our level. I may not be that great, we say, but they actually aren't any better. Third, toward those who we deem to be our peers, our equals, or our primary competitors. These are the folks, we tell ourselves, whom we must really try to outdo if we're going to feel as good as we can about ourselves. We fume, I know I'm better than them. I'm going to prove it. Envy hastes to see others succeed beyond what we have accomplished, or to see others accumulate more possessions, or friendships, or fame. Envy causes us to ask ourselves, why should others enjoy what I can't have? And in doing so, it desires to bring others down to our level, or if possible, below. Envy is the demand that I find my place in the sun, my moment of glory, or the attention and adulation that I feel certain that I deserve. Let's be honest. No one thinks that envy is a laudable attitude. Everyone can see it for its pettiness and ugliness. Therefore, envy is a sin we feel we must hide from others. We don't want to actually be seen being envious. We want to keep it out of the sight of others. The problem is that it's also very easy to hide it from ourselves. We can figure out ways to explain away our envy, or justify it, or minimize it. And that's why I've called this the sneaky sin. It tends not to draw attention to itself, but the hiddenness of envy adds to its festering destructiveness. Envy is birthed in a spirit of comparison and competitiveness. With our sports-oriented culture and our capitalistic economy, it's easy to begin to see everything in life as a competition. And while a little competitiveness isn't a bad thing, it can actually help us up our game, too much of it quickly drives us toward an unhealthy and distorted focus. Envy normally arises within us when we start to make the comparisons in those domains that are most critical to us for our own self-definition. Those areas that are most precious to us in terms of feeling good about who we are. These are the very areas where envy is most likely to strike. So what's the area of your vulnerability to envy? Where can it take root in your life? And here's the paradoxical reality. No matter how hard we try, no matter what we accomplished, Someone else is always going to outdo us. There's always someone who's just a little better or has a little bit more of the thing that we want. That's the teasing futility of envy. In the end, it just ends up making us feel like failures no matter how hard we try. Of course, sometimes others do not justly deserve the accolades that they receive. But why would we insist on making that our problem? Another interesting thing about envy is it's usually a sin of proximity. Now, we might wish that we had Stephen Curry's basketball skills. But envy usually takes place in the context of our own immediate teammates. That's the sphere in which envy raises its head. We don't envy Tiger Woods' skill in golf, but we might very well envy someone who is part of our weekly foursome. We don't envy Shakespeare or Dostoevsky for their ability to write beautiful sentences, but we might envy that guy who just wrote a bestseller on that same topic that we've been writing about. We aren't actually that envious of Bill Gates for his billions, but that guy down the street who has a bigger house and a nicer car than we do, he is likely to be the target of our envy. Proximity. The fundamental reality of envy is that it never actually helps us to achieve anything better. Instead, it ultimately hurts the envier without actually improving their situation in any way. Instead, it poisons what we have or what we've accomplished and makes it seem inadequate or unfulfilling. Feeling envious is destructive of our own happiness, damaging to our relationships, and ruinous to our souls. It confuses our focus, making us think too much about ourselves rather than others. It disorients our goals. Instead of seeing our own small successes and rejoicing in them, it insists on comparing them with those of others. And it poisons our joy through comparison. Remember the classic movie Amadeus? Anyone seen Amadeus? Yeah. It told the story of Salieri, a very talented composer himself, who was driven to near madness by his envy of Mozart, whom he felt was unworthy of the fame that he received. The film tells the story of the destruction of a soul by the toxic power of envy. And because envy is an interior sin, it spreads its rot deep within our souls and even has a deleterious effect on our physical well-being. Proverbs 14:30 tells us that, quote, "A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones." Consider that word picture for a moment. What could be more damaging to our well-being than having our very bones waste away? Well, envy is not a modern problem. It's a perennial human struggle, one that has always been with us. Think about how many biblical characters struggled with envy and the trouble that it brought into their lives. Cain let the envy of his brother build and build until it came to such a boil that he decided to murder him. Jacob was envious of his brother Esau's birthright, and that envy set in motion a series of events that caused a breakdown in his family and necessitated him fleeing for his life. Sarah was envious of Hagar and made Abraham cast Hagar away, becoming the very genesis of the continuing challenges between the peoples of the Middle East. It all started with envy. Joseph's brothers were so envious of him that they faked his death and sold him into slavery. 1 Samuel 18:7 tells us that Saul was envious of David, and so he tried to have the popular young soldier killed. And Mark 15:10 indicates that Pontius Pilate recognized that the chief reason that the priests wanted to crucify Jesus was because of envy. In Paul's list of the characteristics of love in 1 Corinthians 13, in verse 4, he tells us that love is not envious. In fact, envy is the very opposite of love, because it puts all the focus on me and my needs rather than those of others. As the lives of these biblical characters show, our envy can pretty easily pass over from quiet, seething anger into outright hostility, hatred, and violence. But even if it doesn't lead to such a dramatic outcome, our envy can quite easily lead us toward less demonstrative, but still very damaging sins, such as looking for the very worst in others, whispered negative accusations and assertions, critical attitudes, and snide offhand comments. Envy leads us to hurt others, whether directly or in subtle and insidious ways. In our own day, social media tends to feed our envy. Have you noticed that people only post the very best moments of their lives? Their vacations, their achievements, their beautiful relationships. We don't actually see the whole picture, which would include their disappointments, their struggles, their challenges, and their failures. But instead, we think, we take their Facebook post at face value. We compare, and then we despair. If only I could go there, do that, have friends that were as cool as their friends, have a spouse as wonderful as that, be that happy, be that famous, be that successful. We twist ourselves up in knots, longing for something that probably actually doesn't exist. Social media gives us an edited version, which looks pretty sweet, though. And so it can lead us to becoming envious of the lives of others. Or think about the whole world of advertising, which is predicated on what? Making us feel envious. The new car, the beautiful body, the desire to be the life of the party, perfect health, that dream vacation. All these things and more are dangled before us, and we are led to believe that others are currently enjoying what we don't have. So we want it. We want it badly. We want it now. The marketing lies of advertising tell us that we need this thing, we need these things if we're going to be happy. And so, envy readily morphs into greed. Yes, envy is a temptation for all of us, because no matter how great your abilities or your accomplishments might be, you can always find someone who has excelled you. Somehow, for a writer like me, it's kind of perversely comforting to discover that even so great a writer as Jane Austen sometimes experienced feelings of competition and envy. In a letter to her niece, Austen wrote this about the popular writer Walter Scott and his latest novel, Waverly. She wrote, "Walter Scott has no business to write novels, especially good ones. It's not fair. He has fame and profit enough as a poet, and he should not be taking bread out of other people's mouths. I do not like him, and I do not mean to like Waverly if I can help it. But I fear I must. Yeah, it's definitely comforting, though perhaps not in an entirely healthy way, to see that even those who achieve great things are still busy comparing themselves with others. But it's another reminder that envy accomplishes zero, nothing. A final way that envy can manifest itself is through the desire to become professional debunkers. It can cause us to take a fiendish delight in our skepticism. It might cause us to look for the weaknesses in everything, in every person and every institution, focusing on its faults and shortcomings and flaws, as well as their inconsistency and hypocrisy. Somehow, because we think it gives us the license, we think that it gives us the license to be less great ourselves if we can knock others down just a little bit. For some people, this kind of negativity and cynicism, which is birthed in envy, can become a way of life. But it's a very destructive way of thinking and of living. Once we get started as professional debunkers, we will likely end up debunking everything in the end, including things that are beautiful and important, things like faith, courage, art, and even love. If we follow this path to its end, we end up stripping even the most beautiful parts of life of their value, and we are left standing alone in the midst of everything that we have brought tumbling down, with nothing remaining but our cold and cynical envy. The great spiritual writer John Cassian, perhaps in response to the insidious nature of envy, said that of all sins, envy was, quote, the most dangerous and hardest to cure. Thanks, John. But hard doesn't mean impossible. So what can we do about envy? I'd like to offer three suggestions. First, you should put aside your tendency to judge yourself by your accomplishments. We can't afford to allow ourselves the luxury of having our well-being determined by how we measure up with others. Your own value is not determined by what you achieve or the number of possessions you manage to accumulate. So you shouldn't allow yourself to become frustrated or angry or envious when someone else gets the attention instead of you. 1 Corinthians 7:7 tells us that God gives each of us different gifts. Your responsibility is simply to be faithful in the operation of the set of gifts that God has given to you. And you don't need to be better at your gift than other people are. Everything doesn't have to be a competition. And you don't have to impress people in order to find personal satisfaction. You can be yourself. You can do your thing. You can look for inner satisfaction rather than outer acclaim. You can set your own personal goals rather than allowing the culture or those around you to set them for you. Just be productive in your own sphere and in your own way. That's good enough. You don't have to be envious when life is not seen as a competition. Second, you should seek to be more contented with your life. Envy is the polar opposite of contentment. When you are content, you don't have to strive after things or seek to outperform others. If you're contented, you don't need to be envious. Listen to the wisdom from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, verse 22. So I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them? Can you simply enjoy your work and accept it as your lot? The Apostle Paul said that godliness with contentment is great gain. That's 1 Timothy 6:6. Why did he say that? Because godliness and contentment are both characteristics that lead to inner peace and spiritual growth. How do we demonstrate our contentment? One of the ways is by our gratitude and thankfulness. When we practice being grateful and thankful for what we have, it reorients our natural tendency towards self-centeredness. It allows us to take life as it comes, with all the ups and downs, just being grateful for all the gifts that we've been given. When we are grateful, our orientation is toward being thankful for what we have, rather than being focused on trying to get more. Sure, life is unfair. That's the lesson that we should have learned in grade school. But even in the midst of the challenges and struggles we face, we can embrace an attitude of thankfulness and gratitude. It might not change our situation, but it changes our perspective of that situation. And it ultimately changes us. It brings contentment. Third and last, we should train ourselves to root for the successes of others. We can learn not to be intimidated or be made jealous by it, especially the success of those who we might normally consider our competition. Now, the answer is not to spew forth empty flattery, but we should learn to rejoice over the successes of others. As Paul admonishes us in Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. This kind of empathy changes everything. It takes our eyes off ourselves and reorients us toward thinking about others. Of course, it's not easy to set aside our envious feelings. It's hard. But our envious heart can begin to be changed when we make the conscious decision to avoid envy and instead to celebrate with others. Such a decision is the foundation for a change of attitude and a change of heart. Usually a change of action is what precedes a change of heart. So a good place to start is to go out of your way to publicly praise the efforts of your competitor. Choose someone toward whom you might feel some envy and speak positive words about them and their accomplishments. Heap some authentic accolades upon them. The beautiful and paradoxical result is that when they don't feel competition coming from you, they might just be more likely to sing your praises. I had someone in my life who, at least from my perspective, seemed to be constantly feeling the need to one-up me in a mutual area of expertise. First, it annoyed me. Then it began to cross over into some simmering anger. Then I started to have ugly thoughts about my desire to expose him for his hypocrisy and his shortcomings. But before I let things fester too much, I realized that I was participating in the sin of envy. So I made the conscious decision not to speak negatively about him when I had the opportunity, and instead to look for it, to find as many good things to say about him as I could. When he published his latest book, I bought a copy and asked him to sign it. I congratulated him, both in person and online. And as I started to sing his praises, something began to change inside me. I started to shrug off the petty feelings of competitiveness and instead began to actually start to appreciate him, to be able to admire the areas where he truly did excel me, and to find the basis for at least the start of a sort of friendship. And interestingly, when he began to see that it was not necessary to show me up, he began to say nice things about me and my abilities. This helped me to see more clearly that my goal doesn't need to be the very best, which is likely an unachievable goal anyway, but merely to do my very best with whatever project or goal is at hand. And when I have accomplished that more attainable goal, that can and that should be satisfaction enough. Your own struggles with envy may look different than mine, but if you are honest with yourself, you can probably recognize areas of your life where the sneaky sin of envy comes into play. When it raises its head, as it surely will from time to time, make some decisions about how you will deal with it. Put aside the thought that your life is validated by your accomplishments. Relax. Stay in your own lane. Put the competitive spirit aside, or at least save it for its proper place. Seek after contentment. Find the joy in your own life and try to embrace gratitude and thankfulness. And ask God to give you a more empathetic heart that you can rejoice with others in their successes. If you do these things, I think, you'll be on the road to taming a sneaky sin of envy. Amen.